Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain and Anne Guess.
Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast. You're with myself, Paul Spain, and our guest
is Bill Bennett.
Welcome along, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
Episode 82.
Yes. Significant number.
We're getting up there. We're getting old.
Yeah. Looking forward to party on 100.
Yeah. We'll have to have some sort of big mega episode.
Yeah.
Not too far off. This week, Windows 8 is sort of landing for business users. Are going to be able to download it, as is Microsoft's partners and those with MSDN and TechNet subscriptions. So this is going to be it's going to be interesting, because we're still what, 2.5 months away from the retail release of Windows 8, and when the new tablets and touchscreen notebooks and so on are all likely to land in the market, right? It's quite a big time window.
Yeah, but I think this is one that Microsoft's really got to get right. I mean, I know people say this every time there's a new Windows, every time there's a big thing happening with Microsoft, but this one is the big one, because suddenly they're no longer leading the game. It's the first time Windows has come along when, you know, Microsoft isn't the numero uno in the tech business. They've got some serious competition from Google and from Apple. It's going to be a big one.
Well, there's been we've had some discussion in recent weeks that there are big businesses around, a lot of them, that are still running Windows XP.
I know some that are still running 2000.
and there are businesses in some parts of the world that are probably running 2000, and there are some things still running on even earlier versions, such as Windows NT, for some functions of their business.
Yeah, and of course it's some of that's to do with the applications that you just have, people haven't made the jump with the applications.
They haven't worked out how to do it. Yeah. So, in some ways for businesses, Microsoft doesn't need them to go to Windows 8, across the board, but there are a lot of businesses that will probably go from Windows XP to Windows 7, for instance.
Yeah. One of the things that has been discussed a bit in some of the less geeky but knowledgeable computer circles is how every second version of Windows is the one to avoid. And guess where we are?
Version. It's kind of interesting to make those sort of analogies. Maybe there's been a cycle in the past, but
No, the cycle's broken. There's not really a pattern. I mean, I think Vista was very clearly a stopgap for Windows 7. This isn't a stopgap. This is actually an evolution. I mean, the other thing is that Vista came a long time after XP.
It did. Yeah, it was a long time. And I think, there were lots of people that got on quite successfully with it, particularly, after the service pack and so on out, and app. One of the big issues with it, that apps were designed for XP and just wouldn't run on Vista. Of course, all the Vista apps would run fine on 7 and on Windows 8.
Yeah, well, we're running a couple of Vista machines at home, and I think we've got a couple of Windows 7 machines, and they all work nicely together. They all play nicely together as well, which is good.
So, in terms of the excitement, I guess there will be a bunch of people that are really hanging out, looking forward to this availability of Windows 8 for download over the next 24 hours or so.
Yeah. I think I'm going to put it on a spare machine though.
Fair enough. Well, within our business, because what we do is look after technology for businesses. Part of our role is to actually test these things out. So we've been looking at it, since last year, and we've had plenty of hands-on experience. So once it becomes available, we're going to be jumping right in for, probably a large percentage of users, if not everyone. So we can learn what all the good points are, and we can learn what the challenges are, so that our customers don't have to face them.
But then I think it was about a week ago when I had trouble with Office 365, the preview version, In the middle of a job.
Oh, the Office 2013?
Yeah. It just crashed on me, and it's trashed the machine, and it's a production machine, and my God, I'm not going there again.
Yeah, I guess we always get those warnings, don't we? Don't try out the early versions of software on your real machine. But we've got used to the fact that that usually now those pre-release versions of the software are so good that run them if you're in a position where it's not going to put you at risk and so on.
That's right. And I had a spare machine, and I put it on the spare machine, and it worked just beautifully. So I thought it wouldn't be a problem. Of course, it was. And for that reason, I'm just going to be a bit cautious.
Yeah. And I think there's a reason for that. And certainly, you know, in a business situation where you rely on something, you do have to have a fair bit of caution. And, it's part of, I guess, the risk, you know, that that my firm has to take as a technology firm, is we've got to take some of those risks so that our customers aren't put in that position. And you do too, to a degree. As a journalist, you've got to keep up with the play, so you sort of have to jump in, boots and all.
Yeah, you've got to know what you're talking about. You can't write about this stuff without looking at it.
Yeah. Now, there's a raft of Windows 8 tablets that are going to come through, and there's been a little bit of news via Microsoft's blog in the last day or so. And the first one that we heard about is this new ThinkPad Tablet 2. Now, Lenovo have got their original ThinkPad tablet, or their current model ThinkPad tablet, which runs Android Ice Cream Sandwich. We've had a bit of a play around with that recently, and it's got a stylus, and it can do some fancy things. But it's, it doesn't really leap out as a machine that's going to be, of interest to a large audience. But this new ThinkPad Tablet 2, running a full-blown version Windows 8 Professional, looks very interesting. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, my first thought is that Windows 8 on a tablet is going to kill Android in the business space. I think Android may still have consumer traction, but for business, it's not a great operating system. In fact, speaking personally, I don't like Android on a tablet, full stop.
We've certainly had that comment from a number of people on the podcast, and over the last few months,
it feels a bit unfinished. It feels a bit like a toy. You just don't get that unfinished feeling with the iPad at all. And I'm guessing no one's seen the Windows tablet full blown, the full thing yet. But I'm guessing that's going to be as polished as the iPad 2.
Yeah, I mean, what I've seen of Windows 8 running on, for instance, some of the Samsung hardware, which you would have seen as well, it looks pretty polished, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
In terms of the what we're not allowed to call the Metro user interface, the new Windows 8 user interface,
and the fact that none of the tablet makers think they've got to put an overlay on top of it speaks volumes.
Hmm. Well, plus they're not allowed to well, which there's probably some wisdom wisdom in that, right?
Yeah.
That we're going to end up with a consistent experience from one computer to another. You learn how to use Windows 8 on one computer, and it'll be the same on any other Windows 8 computer.
Yeah. And actually, the other thing that's been discussed a bit in the last couple of weeks is, what does this mean for the Ultrabooks? Probably Ultrabooks don't have quite the bright future in front of them they might have had 6 months ago.
Well, that sort of, I think you're right. I mean, the new school of Ultrabooks are likely to be touchscreen as well.
Yeah.
And there are certainly situations, if you sit with a computer on your lap, like I'm doing now, that sort of scenario, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how people will transition, because I don't think a tablet is going to suit everybody in every situation.
But an ultrabook with a touch screen is really a tablet with a keyboard. So,
yep. Except you usually can't take the keyboard off.
Yeah.
With maybe one or two exceptions, and I don't know what those will be.
But the thing is that the distinction between those categories is blurring. Particularly when you've got things like the Asus tablet where you can take the keyboard off. So, you know, there's a spectrum of products there which blur from one to the other.
Yeah, and I hope we see the large majority of these land in the New Zealand market, so we're not stuck with a limited range of options. It seems like they're mostly going to get a broad international release. I'd sort of talked about the Microsoft Surface in the past, and you know, was really getting the feeling that might not make it to New Zealand. But I'm feeling a little bit more positive that we'll actually get the full range. What are your thoughts?
I think we will. I mean, there's always going to be one or two things that don't come here. The real issue is not so much whether we get the full range; it's whether we get the full range at the same time as everyone else. Pass.
Yeah. Well, I think there'll be some vendors who will work very hard to make sure we do. Other vendors, we're so sort of low down their priority list that we may well not.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there'll probably be one or two here on day one. So
I noticed, for example, a lot of Dell kit doesn't make it here. So.
And probably the same with a lot of the other vendors that not all not the full range of models get here, or they don't get here. You know, you'll hear them being reviewed in the US and no sign of availability here. Yeah. So Windows 8 may be a bit of a different picture, and Windows RT, the processor version of Windows, the sort of slightly cut down version, in terms of vendors just really wanting to be able to get that publicity on day one, that they'll probably make an effort to get them out here.
I suspect that Microsoft will be pretty good about getting stuff here, on time and relevant. Don't know about the others. I hope that Lenovo stuff comes here.
Yeah, they're not always known for getting everything here in double quick time, but I have been prodding them, and it's sounding reasonably positive in terms of availability. But we'll wait and see. Now, just looking back at that ThinkPad tablet too, there were two things about it that stood out. One, what we've heard from Lenovo so far is it's lighter than the iPad. And this is a full-blown Windows 8 professional machine. The way they're able to get it lighter is it runs the Atom processor.
Yeah, I think that's... I think,
is that going to work? Is that going to be a powerful enough processor?
The thing is they're not specifying what processor it is. And I reckon there's a new processor.
A new Atom processor. Yeah. That would make some sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, I'm interested to see what comes through there. But I think there's a portion of users that were actually quite happy. You know, we look at the netbooks, that have been around for the last three or four years, and they've run Atoms, even single core Atoms, and have been successful. For certain functions, not so popular now, but at those lower price points, it's probably quite satisfactory for a lot of tasks.
Yeah, well that's the other. That is the other big question, which is the price point. There's no information about what the price of that will be. There's still no information about what the price of the Surface will be when it reaches here as well. There have been reports that they're actually going to be quite pricey, so who knows?
Well, there are plenty of business users that spend $2,000 or $3,000 on a laptop today. And so I think there's room in the market for higher-end devices that have got really, really good functionality and are pricey, but there, of course, needs to be these lower cost units that will compete directly with the iPad.
I mean, I couldn't believe when we were seeing the first wave of the Android tablets coming to compete with the iPad, and even that weird thing from BlackBerry, that the companies are pricing them $200 or $300 above the iPad. Did they honestly think they were going to sell them at that price?
They were, yeah. And certainly those first devices were pretty poor, right across the board. And
second-rate and expensive.
in most cases, I mean, one of the nicer ones from a software perspective was the touchpad, which, of course, just didn't have any chance really of gaining traction. So that was a pity.
Yeah.
In hindsight. Now, ThinkPads, they're having a bit of an anniversary.
Yeah, 20 years old.
Wow.
20 years old last week. And we were talking earlier before we came on air about how much we like ThinkPads, weren't we?
Well, you know, this is what's sitting on my lap at the moment, and you know, and I use this, and I use my my MacBook Pro, and you know, various other you know, devices, but it's, you know, the ThinkPad gear is really well built. We've got good service here in New Zealand, which helps.
I used to like them. I mean, being a journalist, you tend to carry them about a bit, knock them about a bit, and so on. And I reckon my old ThinkPad could stop bullets.
Yeah. Yeah. No. There's they're well built gear. I think the one thing that would be the most common complaint that I hear is that they just don't have the sort of style of the Apple gear and some of the other gear out there, but they just work and they're well built.
Yeah, but
they
also
do the job.
The other thing is that, I mean, Apple says something about the person that's got the machine. I mean, you know, like it or not, that's the reality. And I think ThinkPad says something about it. And one of the things ThinkPad says is, you know, I'm here to work. I'm not here to stuff around. You know, which is, I'm not saying that, you know, Apple users or other people are there to stuff around. I'm saying that with a ThinkPad, it's not a toy. It doesn't look like a toy.
No.
Some of the other ones do.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you think the next, if we look ahead 20 years, right, we're, you know, we're looking back 20, the first, you know, there were, I guess if we look back to the 80s, there were those first sort of portable machines that were these big luggable CRT screens and keyboards that I don't know how much they weighed. They must have been, you know,
I remember
50, 60 kilos.
Like the Osborne was like a sewing machine. And it had a screen about the size of my phone screen, actually.
Like a 5-inch screen or something.
Or smaller than that,
yeah.
And it was monochrome.
Yeah.
It actually looked a bit like an oscilloscope. And those things, they were about 10 grand in today's money as well. And it didn't do very much. I actually have one of those early IBM clamshells, you know, the early floppy-based IBM laptops.
Okay.
As well. You know, being journalists have a love affair with laptops. It's just, it's the tool of our trade. I mean, it's replaced the typewriter for us. And it's one of the reasons they always got so much press. It's because it's what we all used. And I've been using them for probably as long as there have been portable computers. I've been using them. I just hope that there's something like that around in 20 years' time. I'm not sure there will be, though.
Yeah, I mean, when we look at what technology we've got today, how it's shrunk down, we can carry this phone in our pocket that does so many things. We've talked before about a sort of a future where you'll be able to, you know, walk up and the phone in your pocket will link up to screen of whatever format and you can talk to it or use a keyboard, a dock and so on. But yeah, if we look forward 10, 20 years and we think of, you know, how much capacity has grown, communication protocols, you know, we had dial-up modems and so on in the 80s and 90s, you know, we expect the communications pipes to keep growing, don't we, with ultra-fast broadband and so on?
Well, look, what's happened is that every decade, 15 years or so, there's actually a kind of new model of what a computer is comes along. And that's been, you know, the case. I mean, I've been writing about this stuff for 30 years now, and I've seen, we're probably on our, we've come to the end of the third wave of technology in that time. And the thing is, if you go back 5 years, well, 5 years ago, you wouldn't have seen the fact that everyone has a smartphone, or pretty much everyone has a smartphone.
That's true.
You know, how much wireless is everything, the portability, the tablets and so on. All this stuff is actually relatively recent. It's, you know, the last couple of years. And we're actually at the point now where we know there's a revolution going on, but we're not sure where it's going to, you know,
where it's going to end.
Yeah. And we're probably, you know, halfway through that transition. And I guess we're transitioning away from, I mean, we're certainly transitioning away from a world where everyone has a desktop PC in their office. A lot of modern offices now don't have that one desktop per person, you know, I mean, people don't even sit in the same chair every day in offices anymore.
That's true.
So, yeah, there's definitely something going on there. but it's not resolved yet.
And we've got this continual growth in the you know, a reduction in the power that computer technology needs to drive it. Yeah. So we used to have to, you know, always plug into the wall and need all this juice. We can now run devices for hours and hours. You know, in some cases, that's starting to head towards, days. And I think that will be the case in the future. We've got that growth in disk and memory where, you know, the amount of storage available is becoming, it's just becoming madness in terms of how huge it is.
And it's the cloud.
And the cloud. So, you know, you could conceive having something on you or even potentially under your skin that could store all of the information that you would ever need, your music, your video library, plus you've got unlimited storage in the cloud.
It's one of the things that I think is really noticeable about what's happened in the last few years is that today, where most of what we do is what would have been called thin clients, you know, a decade ago, the power, the actual processing power, isn't necessarily at the point of production. Other than that, like I say, who knows where it's going? Mm. But we're on the move.
We are, and it makes exciting. And it makes fun times, right? Because we're seeing new devices, new technology all the time. We're seeing an unprecedented level of competition between vendors and spaces where for a long time there were just, you know, one or two sort of key players.
Oh, and it was almost reaching stagnation about that 5 years ago. Things were beginning to sort of just not move on. And one of the problems was that the ubiquity of Windows and Intel meant that there wasn't much space for the Wintel manufacturers to innovate. They just didn't have much room to do it.
And I think with the advent of the internet and the app store, we've now created an opportunity where new businesses can spin up very, very quickly and can launch onto onto a totally flat global market. So you can launch, you know, anywhere you like. You can launch globally at one point very quickly. This type of business wasn't possible if we look back 15 years ago, was it?
No, but I read something really interesting yesterday in the Australian press that not only do those companies start up really fast now, they close really fast. Apparently, last week, two companies closed and they'd only been going for about 5 months. You know, and again, that didn't happen. It's the pace of everything is accelerating, but the pace of business is accelerating as well as the pace of technology. And these were two tech startups in Sydney. 6 months after they started, they were out of business.
So what does that mean for a small country like New Zealand? Are there great opportunities or are there great risks, or is it just going to be a mix of both in terms of what our future is? Because there are certain things where New Zealand's still going to do well in future economies in terms of tourism, and unless it gets to a point where people just, you know, won't fly. We're still producing a lot of produce and so on.
I think we're really good at the innovating right at the micro level. You know, the modern equivalent of people working their shed, making a better engine or whatever. We're really good at that level. We can't do the stuff where you need a lot of infrastructure, a lot of research infrastructure and technology infrastructure to get going. The thing is these days you don't need much infrastructure to do a lot of this. I mean, to put an app on the App Store, the infrastructure you need is a desktop PC and a cable connection. So I think it's good for us.
I'm looking forward to seeing how things progress, and I think as a country we're making some wise moves in terms of investing in our future around technology, having the infrastructure and the training that gets us geared up to take advantage of technology.
We're going to talk a bit about training in a moment, aren't we?
That's a good segue. So we've just heard that IBM and Unitech are sort of teaming up here in Auckland.
Yeah, it's brilliant, because one of the things that the tech industry misses out on is if you're a plumber, you have an apprenticeship. If you're a carpenter, you have an apprenticeship. And it's a great way to get, you know, to get on the road to those kinds of careers. With technology, till now, you leave college, could be university or college or whatever, and you've got to go and find a job. And it's really hard. That first step is a really difficult step. So to actually have some mentoring going on, which I think is part of the Unitech package, and some real work, doing some, you know, real jobs in a real work for a real company like IBM, it's a great start.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity, and it's pleasing to see that happening here in New Zealand, because IBM could be doing this anywhere, and you know it's great that that's happening. Yeah. That's happening right here.
Yeah, yeah, and the more of this, the better. I mean, I'd like to see some more of this from other companies.
Well, my firm, we can put up our hands and say we'd like to employ graduates too. And I think there are plenty of graduate positions, but probably not enough. And you know, we see that when we advertise, is that there are so many people keen to get in at that ground level, and you know, everyone just needs to get that start after they've. They've finished studying, they're ready to get into the workforce.
I have to say, though, that, again, over my entire career, IBM's always been there having the first pick of students and graduates. They've always been really good at getting in there and doing that.
Smart, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a clever move.
Yeah. Now, we chatted a little bit earlier before we started that there have been two different views on what's happening in the mobile market in New Zealand. Of course, last week, 2Degrees Mobile announced that they'd reached a million subscribers, which that's some fairly solid numbers after 3 years. But there's been some discussion around what's actually happened in terms of prices coming down.
Yeah, there was a story in the Don Post saying that, in fact, prices haven't really come down very much at all. It's one of those angels on a pinhead argument almost, because how many angels you get on a pinhead argument? Because what Tom Puller-Strecker was saying in his story was that the mix of calls has changed, so that whereas previously, if you were a Vodafone customer, you called Vodafone people and you didn't pay very much because on-net calls were cheap.
Vodafone to Vodafone on-net, which is
in telecom jargon is an on-net call. And to call from Vodafone to Telecom would be hideously expensive. Now, calling between the networks is no longer hideously expensive. People are starting to do it much more, but it's still more expensive than on-net calls. So the mix of calls is changing. And, you know, really, I don't think it's not a valid argument to say the caller prices haven't come down. We know that
the retail price calls have come down, and we're seeing more plans that don't care whether you're calling the same network or another network, right?
But so, sometimes mathematics generally speaks the truth, but you know, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics, and I think this is a case of the maths here doesn't really tell the whole story. The story is that the calls are getting cheaper, and in fact, the fact that you can now afford to call between the networks is something to celebrate, not to worry about.
Absolutely. And, you know, when I look at, you know, what I spend, it's a fraction of what I used to spend on running a mobile. And I'm not doing as many calls as I used to, but I'm doing a lot more data, that's for sure.
Yeah, I've moved to a post-pay, but a plan, and I'm actually not using up all my plan minutes every month. So, you're right. It's definitely come down.
Now, in the mobile space, the other thing that we've had, you know, that keeps coming up in discussions has been this near-field communications technology, that the chips that are starting to go into our smartphones. We see them in some of the Android tablets, like the Nexus 7 that we were playing with earlier from Google, and we know that a lot of the Windows RT tablets and probably some of the Windows 8 tablets are going to have this near field communications technologies. Now, you were pointing out when we were chatting previously that this is starting to gain some traction in terms of what's going to happen here in New Zealand around mobile payments.
Yeah, yeah. The I mean, there's a lot of things that have got to be sorted out yet, but in theory, at least, we can have this in place for Christmas shopping. Realistically, that might only be in certain shops, certain stores, and maybe even certain areas. But the
sort of broad availability of or broader than what we have at the moment, because at the moment we've got the Snapper payment system, you know, primarily in Wellington. For you know, for paying for you know, public transport and you know, for use at the local sort of, you know, corner store and so on, that's the sort of primary place where you can use your NFC technology today, mostly with the Snapper card, and there's a few phones with 2 degrees you can use them, so that's very limited, right? But what we're talking about here is
it's widespread. The issues aren't technical. I mean there's a, I suppose you could say the fact that the phones are not necessarily ubiquitous enough is a technical issue, but
that's true.
They're not so much technical as it's really about agreements between the banks and the telcos, where the costs fall, things like what the retailers have to pay to have the technology, whether the terminals go in for free or whether they have to pay for them. Because bearing in mind that our banks are all branches of Australian banks, we're obviously going to piggyback what goes on over there, and there's been some very exciting developments in payment technology with the Commonwealth Bank recently in Australia, which of course is the parent bank of ASB. They've got some Android devices. Have you talked about that one here before?
No, the Australian side.
No. Okay. Well, Commonwealth Bank has some Android devices, and they're banks. You know, we're talking about the bank providing them, not as at the moment, if you know, FPOS terminals provided by other parties. And they're making a very clear technical play. I mean, it's almost like a bank becoming a technology company. And you can rest assured, but what happens with Australian banks is coming here.
It's coming here, isn't it? Yeah. I guess we're seeing that change across a lot of industries where it doesn't matter what business you're in, you have to gear up with technology and get closer to the cutting edge of technology to be able to win business, to stay in front of your competitors, and to be considered relevant now.
And that's been Commonwealth Bank in Australia. Commonwealth Bank's strategy has been very much to do that. And they've used technology as a weapon to beat the competition with time and time again. I mean, their online banking is apparently streets ahead of everyone else. I couldn't tell you this because it's 5 years since I've used a Commonwealth Bank online, but apparently it is. And the technologies that they're rolling out to retailers and so on again are a long way ahead. I mean, they are probably up with the play internationally. I mean, they might be out in front of banks elsewhere in the world. They're certainly out in front of American banks.
Mm. And we're seeing good movement here from ASB too, aren't we? You know, the number of the banks have got mobile apps, but the work they've done recently, so you can pay anybody who's on Facebook, you can pay somebody with an email address, just making that very, very easy, and as well as being able to run it on multiple devices was their last round of updates.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear that the board members at the banks have been reading all that stuff we've been writing for years about technology transformation and so on. But they're taking it seriously, and you're actually seeing what happens when companies start to apply technology at the very core of everything they do.
Mm-hmm. No, it's great to see, and I hope that these things really catch on across New Zealand, because if we can, within our own businesses that serve New Zealanders, if they can stay at the forefront, that just spreads this sort of mindset of leveraging technology to bring good outcomes for people, and will make us as a country much more able to bring new products onto the global market as well, and to export technological ideas and solutions.
Well, that's right. I mean, one of the things that's really encouraging is I've heard that the three mobile phone companies here and the banks have all been in discussions together. I mean, they're all singing from the same sheet on this. There may be some issues that are not resolved, but they're definitely working together on this. It's not a case of fragmentation.
And I guess we have an advantage compared to most countries, being a smaller market, that it's much easier to get through those politics and to come up with a solution. So, yeah, it would certainly be our hope that the telcos and the banks do pull together something that becomes a fairly universal solution.
Yeah, you're so right, because in Australia they had to be mandated to do that by the government. Here, didn't happen. They just got on with it.
I guess the flip side is if everyone comes together and there's no there's no competition on it, then they can potentially take whatever cut that they like too, right?
There'll be competition.
All right. Now the other topic, and I'm really interested to see what's going to come up over the next few months with NFC and near field communication. So I think we should pick this one up again as we see that progress. Apps now, it's really become. It used to be that we'd talk a lot about the new websites we've found and so on, but these days with our smartphones and tablets and devices, it's we've got a much more sort of app-centric world, I guess. Now, let's chat through some of those. I've got a couple to share. I've been doing a column for Stuff and the Waikato Times each week, and just talk about a new app there each week. There's a few that you've been discovering. What's sort of at the top of your list at the moment?
My favourite one at the moment is one that I've only just downloaded in the last couple of days. It's called Outline Plus, and it's a native iPad application for playing with your OneNote files that are stuck somewhere on a Windows computer. Now there's a OneNote app for the iPad, but it's not as nicely integrated as this third-party one. It's about $20 for the Plus version. There's a free version which I think allows you so many pages of information. But being a journalist, I use OneNote a lot for clipping things and storing stuff for references and so on. Mainly because on the desktop computer, I can then go in and search everything really easily.
It's pretty handy tool, isn't it? Because it lets you, type in content. You can record. Yeah. You can put photos and video in there, and it all syncs back via the cloud, right?
Yeah. And I've got it on my laptop and my desktop, and I can get it on my phone and so on. Mm. But the iPad application is just it's a viewer in effect. Mm. It's a viewer into your OneNote files, whereas the Outline Plus is you can actually manipulate the files and you can add material and so on. So I'm going to be testing that quite a lot over the next couple of weeks, but it looks to me like the business. And one of the things I really like about it is the way that the Apple world and the Windows world don't necessarily always play nicely together. And it's not necessarily in Apple's interest or Microsoft's interest for that to for those things to be that smooth, particularly where now that Microsoft's got its own tablet play,
that's
about
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So this third party company came along and whacked something up, and it's fabulous. I love to see it. I mean, it's
interesting. I wonder whether they're going to launch it on other platforms or whether it's all about just delivering a really great experience on the iPad for them.
Yeah. Well, you mean like an Android version, perhaps?
Yeah. Because I don't think we've got OneNote on Android yet.
No, there's something really kludgy.
So yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
There are a couple of apps that I've written about recently. One is called Food Spotting. I don't know if you've come across Food Spotting.
No.
So this is, we've got our traditional apps for helping you find restaurants, sort of restaurant finder apps. This goes sort of a step further, and it's a social application where you take photos of individual dishes or meals at a restaurant. And so you can take a photo. It takes use of the GPS and lets you know. It'll list the restaurants in the area, and you can attach on. And very good, just if you're wanting to go out for a meal, you can quickly browse what's available, but not just the restaurant names. You can see photos and reviews of the individual dishes and so on. So if there are particular things you like, it's quite cool.
Haven't you noticed if you go into a restaurant now, there's always someone photographing their food?
Yeah, I think with the advent of smartphones, it's become quite common. So this sort of just ties together that habit of somebody, you know, photographing a great meal or a meal that's really well presented and actually doing something with it rather than it just going onto Facebook or just going into the phone and not being used. So it sort of, you know, it really shares it with a broad audience.
So you see something you like and you've got to drive to Hamilton.
Yeah. Well, when I fired it up from home the other day, and you know it and there's a lot of restaurants in the area, but it came up with the very closest restaurant, which is top of the street, and you know a whole bunch. So I was quite impressed that they've actually got a good, obviously a good base of people that have used it already around New Zealand, and you know, and have reviewed the restaurants and dishes. Not all of it's fresh content, but it's relevant. It's, you know, it's not years and years old.
That's a weird thing about having an Android phone, actually, is that when I search for something that's local, I live in Beach Haven.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I get things that are in Te Atatū, which is, you know, probably only 2 or 3 kilometres away, but it's across a harbour.
Yeah, not much help, is it? Yeah.
It's probably that 18K drive.
Apps don't always think that way, do they? Yeah, yeah. Well, I haven't noticed it doing that, but probably because there are so many restaurants that are, you know, within hundreds of metres of me. So, I'm not getting ones on the other side of the harbour. The other app, which is a website that a lot of people have been using for a long time, is IMDb, the Internet Movie Database.
Yeah. Oh, I've been using that app for years.
It's a great app, isn't it? I just find it so so useful in the way that it's, you know, these days it's got, you know, all of the movie listings and the cinemas and so on. So, you know, I was out with a friend a week or so back, and yeah, we wanted to get some dinner before catching a movie, and you know, I was about to walk across the car park to the cinema to have a look, and I thought, no, I don't need to do that, and I just turned on the app, and I could see the times, and just, you know, focused on getting something to eat. It was great.
And the other thing, I love about it is, you see a TV show that you love, you go on there, and you find there's another 57 episodes.
Yeah, there's so much information, isn't there? Yeah. And now with the you know, with the advent of all the ways that we've got of getting content, you know, I find it really helpful just to know, you know, is this any good?
Yeah.
Is that movie any good if you're at a cinema, or even if you're sitting in front of Netflix and you've got a big library of content, you can go in and quickly just get a handle on whether, you know, whether it's rubbish or whether it might be you know, worth watching.
But I tell you where it's not good. It's not good with very recent television. It's you. If there's something that was on TV last night in the US, the reviews are not necessarily.
It takes a while to build up that content, doesn't it? Yeah. And there are certain you know, techniques and so on that they use, which makes it probably better for films than it is for fresh content.
But yeah, my word, I've had that. It's a must-have application.
So, yeah, good. Well, that's probably us for this week. I think we've probably got through, we've got through everything.
Yep.
So thank you everyone for listening in. Now, Bill, where do we find you, online? You're on Twitter.
Yes, Bill Bennett NZ with 2 N's, 2 T's. As my father used to say, it's like Guinness, 2 of everything. And, BillBennett.co.nz. And, I just had the best week online I've had for ages. Someone picked up something, went around the world, and suddenly had a surge of traffic.
So what have been the stories that you've been writing about? What have you been writing about recently?
It's an old thing that someone picked up on. I wrote a piece of 10 ways to write something. I forget the exact wording, but it's something like 10 ways to write a rubbish press release. And it was just the sort of advice on how to write really bad press releases, which, you know, a lot of people have been following.
yeah, it's obviously struck a chord and starting to get spread around via social media.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I'm on Twitter too, and my Twitter handle is just my name, Paul Spain. And I have a blog via Geekzone, which is techjungle.com, and also have paulspain.com. If you want to follow the podcast, we are on most of the social media platforms. So on Twitter, we're NZ Tech Podcast, facebook.com/NZ Tech Podcast, and nztechpodcast.com. So that's us. Thank you, everyone, for listening in, and we will catch you again on the next episode of the NZ Tech Podcast.
Good night.
Thanks, Bill. Cheers.
Cheers.